Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
People who are listening should know that Mr. Matt Kelly has now put on his spectacles, which always indicates a moment of great gravity and importance.
I can't find my script, Matt. Did you send it to me? Huh? Oh, you've WhatsApped it. Sorry. Hello, I'm Matt Kelly.
And I'm Matt D'Ancona.
And this is The Two Matts for the week ending Friday, the 28th of July, a podcast where pain is subjective.
Pain is subjective.
That will come to make sense.
It will.
What did we talk about in this episode?
We talked about the massive overreaction to the Uxbridge by-election and the way in which both main parties are retreating from
the green commitments
they've made.
Yeah. And we also talked about the fantastic piece of television on Channel 4, Greg Wallace and Michelle Roux Jr. in the British Meat Miracle.
Which is a mystery that will be unwrapped before your very ears.
Yes, it will.
Or eyes if you're watching on YouTube.
It's absolutely fabulous and well worth...
And fascinating.
Hanging on for the second half to hear about that. What should we call this week's episode?
Well, pain subjective is pretty good.
Pain subjective.
Should we do that?
Folks, to people who haven't heard the... listened or watched the Greg Wallace bit of telly, that will be utterly meaningless, but it will make sense
if you
persevere.
It's a good, come hither, isn't it?
It is.
It's so much that we do.
Done deal. This is The Two Matts, Episode 6.
Pain Subjective.
What are we going to talk about?
I think we should talk about Green Retreat because I think the theme of the week has been, there's lots going on this week, but for me the theme of the week has been, it started with the by-election results and Uxbridge and Ruislip being, just held by the Tories. That then led to, it's all to do with ULEZ, the ultra-low emission zone, being extended by Sadiq Khan to that area, and there was no doubt it was a big issue in that by-election for very specific reasons, which then just kind of grew into, more predictably, sort of Rishi Sunak dialing down the green, basically.
Yeah. It was a bit reminiscent of the green crap, kind of.
It was very...
There's a
good clip of him talking about not wanting to hassle people. I wonder if our... wonderful producer.
Can the third Matt get that?
Matt help and play it for us.
Great.
Yeah, of course net zero is important to me, and that's why after I became Prime Minister earlier this year, I set up a brand new government department for energy security and net zero. So yes, we're going to make progress towards net zero, but we're going to do that in a proportionate and pragmatic way that doesn't unnecessarily give people more hassle and more costs in their life. That's what I'm not interested and prepared to do.
What a delivery, by the way. I mean, he's like the bloody Wheel of Fortune standing guy. It's like...
he leans forward a lot, doesn't he?
But it's like, it's so plastic.
And also, if you didn't know he was talking about the potential extinction of the human race and climate emergency that will devastate the planet and many species other than ourselves and cause suffering on a planetary scale that we haven't even begun to see, you would never guess that's what he's saying. He's as if this is... can be framed in terms of the amount of hassle it causes people.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably it does cause people a bit of hassle, but then so do droughts and floods and, heart diseases caused by overheating.
But I'm finding it really hard on a personal level to get beyond the obvious insincerity of
yes,
it all.
Yes, I agree.
If only that bullshit was a little bit more convincing, if they put a bit more effort into yes. trying to just at least appear a bit more sincere, I wouldn't be so riled by it. But it's the kind of arrogant, look, I really can't be arsed dealing with this, but I'm just going to bark into this camera and grin like a lunatic.
And say the and same things
going,
10
of course,
times.
Of course, of course. Yes. You know, and expect people to go, yeah, because no one's listening because it's the delivery of it is so absolutely facile.
I'm sure that's true. People switching off. I mean, I can't see either side being particularly reassured by that. I mean, certainly people who care about climate change, but by the way, is a lot bigger than some conservatives think, because there's two elements to it. I mean, the young, of course, are very heavily skewed to caring deeply about this. But there's also a very large number of conservatives who believe in action about climate and indeed about air pollution and other things because they are conservers, old-fashioned Tory voters, if you like. And polling-wise, there's no doubt that people are, you know, they're chary about individual measures because everyone is. If you say, do you like this tax rising? There's always going to be an opposition. But if you talk to them about the generality, overwhelmingly people have now moved to a position where they really care. And the thing that tends to push people over the hill is the idea that it's just not right to bequeath to the next generation, you know, a fried planet.
And yet, okay, so here's the flip side of it, the evidential flip side,
yep.
is that we do know in Boris Johnson's old seat, people did get very
yes.
leery about the idea of 1 in 10 older, very polluting cars being taken off the road because yes. they've become unaffordable. And it did cost a by-election. So it is this weird paradox, isn't it, where we all look at the front pages of Roads yes. on Fire and we think, bloody hell, I was there on holiday yes. last year. And actually, my cousin's on holiday there now and not having a great time. And the planet's on fire, but I don't want to pay £12.50 to move my car.
Yes.
You know, so there is something generic, macro and micro, that don't match.
And this is why the absence of leadership is the problem, which is that, of course, the measures necessary to do anything about this are going to be difficult, thorny, and in many cases flawed. I mean, the ULEZ is flawed because it doesn't address exactly what you mentioned, Matt, which is that, as Uxbridge shows, there's a very specific issue there, which is not great public transport. It's not that posh. Many parts of it are quite, you know, people who are not, you know, well off. And they of course, therefore, disproportionately have older cars, which makes them more liable to the ULEZ charge, and therefore it's regressive. Now, the way to deal with that is to say, message received, we need a better scrappage system, but not to retreat from the whole green agenda. And I think that, you know, you expect, so Lord Frost, David Frost, very much a sort of right-wing Brexiteer, stormed in with, you know, climate change is going to happen and we should take advantage of it, which is the most extraordinary thing.
Well, he was basically saying, well, climate change might not be such a bad thing. If it's
exactly.
We live in a cold, wet country.
You know,
if a bit more sunshine, happy day.
Happy days, which is so ignorant. I mean, we've just had the Met Office this week saying that 2022 was the highest temperatures in history in the UK. And, you know, we tipped over 40 degrees, which is unheard of, and so the direction of travel is very clear.
Well, they said what they said was that by the end of the century, that's going to feel like a cold summer.
Exactly,
and my that's what my kids, my younger kids, will see. They'll see that as old citizens. You know, that's what they'll be living in. So
and look,
it's very clear.
You know, it's true that ULEZ is not actually anything to do with climate change. It's to do with air pollution. But hang on, I mean, the figures are about rising respiratory diseases.
Well, this is the point, man.
Asthma.
But this is where I can't, I mean, maybe I'm missing it, but if I am, then there's something wrong because I'm a Londoner.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been living within the ULEZ, the inner ULEZ cordon for some time and appreciate that nitrogen dioxide levels are dropping substantially. But for me, as somebody thinking about how would I frame this as a journalist,
yes.
You know, if I was trying to make the case for this on the front page of a tabloid newspaper, like the Daily Mirror,
yeah.
I'd have a sea of people who died from asthma in London last year.
And,
by the way, there is a bloody sea of them. I think
there's a lot
like 4,000 people.
Oh, it's plenty. I mean,
and the UK has the worst respiratory conditions of any nation in Western Europe, right? And London is the worst of the worst. I think there was a report like something 24 of the worst 30 constituencies are in that outer London ring asthma conditions. So that's what you've got to try and personalise it and say
This affects you.
These 20 people in your borough
died
last year because of this thing, which is entirely preventable. But we are breathing this shit that's coming out of these old cars. Yeah. Sorry, folks, but you're going to have to move on.
But we live in an era, unfortunately, where that narrative, which it seems to me is a very plausible one and a persuasive one, is just not what politicians are doing. That populism doesn't like that kind of, it's going to cost you, but we can work it out.
Well, yeah, but isn't it the case that the populists actually are very good at saying, why should, Mary Blogg...
No, that's what I mean.
They're good. But it's the other side. It seems, like the bloody Remain campaign, waffling on about generalities.
Well...
Instead of getting right down into the weeds
into
and
the
saying...
Human dimension,
These are the people, and it's you and your friends.
And a narrative that speaks to
that
people's
makes
hearts
sense,
as
exactly.
well as their heads. Which brings us to Keir Starmer.
Yeah.
So I have some sympathy, a lot of sympathy, for the argument that Starmer's people make, which is, look, we just need to get the Tories out, right, whatever it takes. However, there have to be some limits to that. And I think the New European has argued very well that there has to be a different line on Brexit than making Brexit work, which is feeble.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was seriously dismayed by Starmer's response to Uxbridge, which was, he goes straight to the National Policy Forum in Nottingham, I think, and says, we should really think about where we were on ULEZ because of course, Sadiq Khan, Labour Mayor and so on. We can't be having a policy that's on every single Conservative leaflet. Now, let's just take that thought for a minute. Yeah. All your policies are going to be on Conservative leaflets, if you have any, by the time we go to general election. That cannot be the criterion for whether or not Labour supports ULEZ or, for that matter, radical action on climate change. We've already had the row back from the 28 billion investment a year. Oh, it's now going to be during the next parliament, not immediately. And just a line that struck me in a Sunday Times piece, which was one of Starmer's people saying to the Sunday Times that the green policies were, quotes, dead weights.
Yeah.
And that is green, like Cameron's green crap, David Cameron's green crap. So I understand that Starmer's nervous about Ed Miliband's more visionary approach to climate. I would rather he went with the Miliband, but there's a difference between saying, right, let's hold our horses a little bit for electoral reasons.
He seems too conservative to
but
me.
But just...
He needs to
I mean,
just
he's now talking about, like, it's very hard to see what's left in terms of greenery about this Labour Party. And that is a disastrous position because he has to do more than just be a beater of the Conservatives. He has to be someone who's going to have a vision. And he talks about missions all the time, right? Well, if ever there's a mission that needs to be grasped, and as you said, given a sort of narrative that speaks to voters' hearts, which is if you vote Labour, we will make this a cleaner, less carbon emitting country post haste, because we know that's what you care about. Mm-hmm. And not being afraid of saying that, because of course, Rishi Sunak and Lord Frost and, Suella Braverman and Grant Shapps talking about Labour being the political wing of Just Stop Oil. And it was a wonderful letter by John Gummer, who used to be the Environment Secretary. Yeah. This week, just saying, grow up.
Yeah.
You can't talk like that about an issue of this gravity.
And also, I heard Alistair Campbell, your co-editor at large of the New European,
the editor at larger, I think we call
the editor at larger, and also he's got a small podcast which I've got hopes for. I think it's going to do quite well.
I think it might
do
quite well. Fingers crossed.
It's not bad.
Big shout out to Alistair and Rory.
He was saying they loved it. They loved it when the Tories were talking about their policies.
Of course.
You know, they lived for that. It's called setting the agenda.
Earned advertising.
Absolutely. You know, they wanted to be able to be pushed into the debate so they could have the debate.
Of course.
Now, at the moment, what you've got is banal sound bites from a banal prime minister and a leader of the opposition who seems quite comfortable just sitting in the slipstream of that and doesn't want to break out of it for fear of scaring horses.
You have to. And I remember Blair, in his memoirs, talks about how it's fine to be cautious, but there is a point where you have to get going.
Yeah,
and that's long past here.
Surely Starmer, you know, I know they've thrown Corbynism out of the window completely.
Yeah,
but I think there was a baby that got thrown out as well, which was what Corbyn was able to do, obviously, because the policies, as far as I'm concerned, were not electoral winners. But the passion was, and
yes,
the vision,
exactly right.
And the way he spoke of a promise of a better world. My view is he was never going to get us to a better world. But the way he went about it was very effective.
And the need for a new social contract.
Yes,
and
exactly
also,
that.
As you know, we've said before, the need for the 21st century to start.
Exactly.
Because that's the Labour task, which is to say, okay, right, we've had this sort of terrible period.
Yeah.
In which terrible damage has been done to not just the British economy, but also the British sense of self-esteem and relevance to the world and social solidarity. These things have been seriously vandalised. Our job is to not just bring Britain back to a position of self-respect, but also really tackling the problems of today.
Yeah.
And he's not doing that. And the one sort of thing that makes me think he could still stumble is that all campaigning history shows that the problem with being a blank check is that your enemies get to define you.
Yeah.
So if he goes into the election being defined by what he isn't, that enables the Tories to say anything. And they will say he's going to tax you to the skies. They'll say it's going to be Labour's tax bombshell number two. They just want to smuggle in socialism under greenery. They love Just Stop Oil. Just name it. You know, that we could make up the slogans ourselves. And that's a very dangerous position for a leader of the opposition to be in.
And I'm afraid that as much as, you know, we cried out for a period of political stability, listening to Sunak and Starmer, it does remind you what's good about personality politics. You know, it's like a conversation or a debate between a smarmy estate agent and a clever conveyancing lawyer. You know, it's just generic nonsense.
I know that after the sort of theatrical grotesqueries of Boris Johnson, there was a point where people were saying, you know what, we want a bit of boring.
Yeah.
I don't think people ever want a bit of boring.
No.
You know, even Trump, for all his horrific qualities, which scarcely need to be mentioned, one of the reasons he won was because he is compelling and interesting.
But why is it always the bad guys who are so bloody
charismatic? Well, it isn't always, actually. I mean, Obama, you know, you can argue that his presidency was disappointing.
No, you're absolutely right.
Ditto Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
You know, the difference between the two Clintons is chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Hillary Clinton is a classic example, I think, of the kind of politician we're talking about. You know, she thinks that if you throw data visualizations into the Midwest, you sort of drop them from a plane.
Yeah.
People will go, oh, well, I like this. You know, I'm going to vote Democrat. Whereas Bill Clinton was he was a charisma machine in 92. And again, you know, he ran into trouble and all sorts of difficulties. But one must never forget that you know, he started the wave that Schroeder and Blair surfed. I mean, he was supernaturally good election.
And you've got to say, you know, I know he's like the ultimate divisive figure, and for many reasons, rightly so, but Blair had it
Blair's,
in spades. But Blair was probably the last real, genuine, charismatic leader
Blair,
this country's had. Blair,
94-97, was a force of nature. And, you know, they are around. I mean, I think...
Who do you think of the current crop has got it?
I think Wes Streeting has got it.
Do you?
Yes, yeah. I do. I think, and I think he and Peter Kyle, who, you know, are basically the equivalent of Brown and Blair.
Yeah.
Have it in them to be an absolutely incredible double act.
Yeah.
But I, actually, funnily enough, the person that immediately came to mind was the person we interviewed for last week's podcast, Caroline Lucas, who's sadly leaving the parliamentary scene at any rate. I mean, I think she is a genuinely inspiring figure.
Yeah. It's just such a shame that that the Labour Party, for instance, couldn't accommodate somebody like that, because she could do a lot of effective stuff within within one of the two parties that are only ever going to wield any influence in this.
I mean, I'm absolutely a fan of having people around senior politicians who are, you know, nerdish and brilliant and fantastic at detail and granular detail. But I'm not a believer in technocracy. You know, the way back for the left of centre, for want of a better word, is not to just produce reams of data saying Brexit hasn't worked, though it hasn't, but to speak to the heart and to find ways of, honestly rather than dishonestly, because that's got to be the, I mean, that's got to be the crucial difference, is that one of the terrible legacies of this era of Tory populism has been that no one trusts anything.
That's right.
So it has, what Labour says and the Lib Dems say has to be, you know, they have to be able to bank that check.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to come back to it again, but the, because I do, you know, I realise that I'm probably looking at this in quite a shallow way, but please, just some charisma and energy and inspiration in politics. I remember speaking to somebody about Google when I was a technology correspondent, and I said, but what they're doing, it doesn't seem to make any sense, blah, blah, blah. And he said, listen, don't make the mistake of thinking that they're clever people. They're not. There's a few of them that are very clever, but there's a lot of people in Google who are very, very mediocre people. And they're just a big corporation like anybody else. And the same politics goes on in that office as any other office. And the more you look at politics right now, the more mediocre and tired it seems. And some of them you wouldn't send out for a bag of chips, never mind to rewrite a climate manifesto. You know, it's got, where is the spark?
It's very interesting. You talked about corporations, because two things, totally different poles of, I totally agree with you. I don't think it's a shallow point. I think it's the point. So I watched an episode of The Original Office the other day, you know, because it's just sort of so good. But what I did think was, my God, Ricky Gervais's David Brent is now quite like a party political leader. That's how, you know, the kind of slightly dishonest, very dishonest kind of self-presentation and toe-curling awfulness. I mean, that's kind of what politics has become. The other thing, which is at the other extreme, was just because I'm interested in it and actually planning next week's column, I listened to JFK's speech in Rice University in Texas in 62, about the space race.
Yeah.
You know, we don't go to the moon because it's easy, we go there because it's hard.
That's right.
Can you imagine
any
politician, let alone politician in this country, saying that now?
Well, it's the polar opposite of what they are saying right now.
Yes.
Both in style, because that was a great piece of oratory, and these people wouldn't know oratory if they smacked them in the
and
face,
also,
but in substance as
and
well.
And also, they, instead of giving vision and hope and inspiration, they blame, they pre-blame failure on the weakest and the most vulnerable.
Well, Rishi Sunak would have said, we'd like to go to the moon, but we're not going to right now because it's a bit inconvenient.
And also because of all these small boats. I'd love to
go
to the moon.
Yeah, I mean, I want to sink some dinghies first.
He did a Twitter thread this week about small boats and activist lawyers, as he put it, which was essentially a plug for the Daily Mail.
It really was.
And the words "new low" do spring to mind, don't
they? I mean, you had to, that first tweet where you had to divine the commas in it. So is he really saying the Labour Party are aligned with criminal gangs?
Apparently.
It really is what he was saying.
It was what he was saying. And it's certainly what he intended to be taken away.
Just appalling.
But when you move to shamelessness is a very liberating thing.
Yes.
It doesn't get you anywhere, but when you get to where he is, and I do believe he's shameless. Yeah. I don't buy this idea that he's Mr. Nice Guy just because he smiles a lot and goes to the movies with his kids to watch Barbie. I don't. I don't care.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Look, you know, show not tell. What's he actually doing? What he's doing is he's victimizing the weakest people on earth, the most vulnerable, needy people on earth, in order to give his party a hope at least of perhaps minimizing the scale of Labour's victory.
That's right.
I mean, how many kinds of deplorable is that?
How do you sleep at night?
How do you sleep at night,
Mr. Sunak? How do you sleep at night?
Because if he is indeed Mr. Reasonable and Mr. Stanford Business School, you know, Mr. Hedge Funder, Mr. Smiley, it's all the worse.
Yeah.
No, you know, you can't even blame it on psychosis. Right.
At least, like, you could say to Boris Johnson, well, he's genetically like that. He can't help himself.
He can't help himself.
Sunak, it's
a decision.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. Well, listen, I think we've brought that to as far as we can go at the moment, but I have no doubt we'll return to it.
Absolutely.
But let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Greg Wallace.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Wow!
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So, Matt, best bit of TV I've seen in a long time. I can't even remember what it's called now. The British Meat Miracle?
Yeah.
Something like that? Well, Channel 4?
You sent me a link in one WhatsApp. And I
had not seen it till I
hadn't seen it. So I thought, this looks interesting. And I watched it, and I suspect, like you, I was very grateful for the tip, but I watched it with a growing horror. Then I realised that it was a hoax. But even when I realised it was a hoax, I admired it even more.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, perhaps, can you bring us up to speed on what it is?
So, yes, I mean, if there's
Greg Wallace,
the MasterChef star, who gets on my nerves in MasterChef because he's so... bloody, I hate enthusiastic people. And he's
so enthusiastic, isn't he?
That's really unfair. I'm sure he's a lovely guy.
Slappably enthusiastic.
He's a lovely guy, I'm sure. But I've got to say, he plays an absolute blinder in this. And it's, the context of it is, and I'm pretending to be very, very well read now. I didn't know that Dean Swift, the great Irish satirist, Anglo-Irish satirist, had in 1729, I think, written... an essay called A Modest Proposal, which was and I think the full title of it is something like, it's a modest proposal for to prevent poor children becoming a burden to their parents and the state, or something like this. And basically the proposal is that...
Do you want a quote from it? Because I've got some of it.
Have you? Go on.
I have been assured by a very knowing American of my acquaintance in London that a young, healthy child, well-nursed... Well-nursed is really horrible, isn't it? Is, at a year old, a most delicious, nourishing and wholesome food, whether stewed, roasted, baked or boiled. and I make no doubt that it will equally serve in a fricassee or a ragu.
It was the fricassee which got me.
Oh, terrifying.
So
brilliantly written.
But the point about it was that when he wrote it in the 18th century, it was kind of, you know, he was addressing a real stark situation.
Yes.
People in desperate poverty, didn't know how to feed themselves.
Starvation.
There was a famine going on. You know, it's like, how do we get ourselves out of this? And, let's eat the children of the poor.
It's the obvious solution.
Flash forward 300 years. That's right, isn't it? 300 years.
Almost. And six shy.
And some genius in Channel 4 decides to do an updated version of this essay, A Modest Proposal. And Greg Wallace, it's a bit more like one of his... And I'll confess to being addicted to these, the Inside the Factory shows, where you're making like Walker's crisps.
So here I am in the factory.
It's the baked, how do you make baked beans? How many? 2 billion baked beans an hour? It's amazing.
2 billion baked beans an
hour. So it's very much in that vein. Yes. But what it is, it's in a mocked up factory called Harvest, and it's human...
Good Harvest.
Good Harvest. Human meat for humans.
It's incremental, like all great dramas, it's incremental. Yeah. So he starts off with, they've taken human cells and they're cultivating into what are effectively doner kebabs.
They call it a meat cake.
Doner donors, you know, meat cake, exactly. Yeah. And so the first slightly stomach churning thing is these kind of cultivated things, which are, you know, made from human cells originally, but not actual human flesh. So first of all, you're thinking, okay.
Yeah. And then fast forward.
To
where people are being paid, because this is the other side of the business model.
Yes.
Which again is so plausible. You know, you're poor, these people can't pay their energy bills, but what we can do them is give them 400 quid for a bit of their buttocks. Right. And then you've got these people in pre-op interviews where Greg Wallace
really
is so
chillingly done.
And it was the point was that it was just so believable, where you got all these people saying, well, you know, I can't pay my bills, I can't put any food on the table, but I I'm told it won't hurt. And then there's this venture capitalist entrepreneur chief executive saying, no, it doesn't really. It's pain subjective.
Pain subjective. What does that mean?
One of the ages, wasn't it? And these people are wheeled off into operating theatres and sliced up a bit, and not enough, obviously, to do any permanent damage. But then the meat is then put into this nutrition bath and balloons into these meat cakes, which are then sold as very cheap steaks. And then not only Greg Wallace, but then you've got the great Michel Roux Jr. at, is it Le Gavroche?
Le Gavroche, yeah.
His double Michelin starred restaurant.
Again,
cooking up with total straight face.
Completely straight face.
Cooking up these human steaks and then saying, do you think, Greg, that you could tell the difference between the taste of someone born in the northeast of
England? The Geordie steak.
Because it's what we call in France the terroir.
It's really brilliant.
It's brilliantly done. And the last kind of element to it is
the horror punch
is where they say there's a mystery piece of meat in the premium line.
Yes.
And it's served up and the two of them go into raptures about how tasty this is. And then it is revealed at the boardroom meeting where Greg Wallace is invited. And I apologise, you know, we are giving the whole bloody thing away here, but I promise you it won't affect how much fun this thing is to watch. It is revealed that this is the flesh of children.
Toddler tartare.
So, and at this point, Greg Wallace pales a little bit.
Yes.
He's acting superbly.
Really superbly.
And the whole thing is maxed out to amplify the satire of it. But you're still left with this impression that you've watched a fantastic piece of television. But the reason it's so fantastic is it's literally so close to the bone.
It is really close to the bone. I mean, it made me think a lot, and look into a little bit, you know, what are people doing out of desperation because of cost of living crisis? And it's everything but, there's, you know, shoplifting is massively up.
Yeah.
Baby banks have had to open because people can't afford basics for their newborns. I mean, let's absorb that one
horrific,
for a minute.
Yeah.
There's organ trafficking. There was a trial in, I think, March, which didn't involve Brits, but it was the first time that organ trafficking using the Modern Slavery Act had been the subject of a trial. And it led to a lot of people in the charity sector saying, this is, there are obviously serious safeguarding issues here. We need to be very, very vigilant that people aren't basically selling their kidneys.
Although not quite as bad as Petronella Wyatt recently tweeted, saying she knew personally
of
two people who'd come back off holiday with no kidneys.
Yes, and, I think we need a renal specialist to explain.
Yeah. Light about people trading their
cash. And you know, more than one in four of all people, children in the UK now living in poverty. Yeah. So suddenly you realise, well, you know, we live in a world of AI and incredible oncology and amazing technology and so on. But we also live in a world where there are people starving to death in the UK.
In the UK.
So Swift's inspiration to this programme, it's not just a bit of fun. It is very beautiful. It's purest satire, because it's, the reason it's funny is because it's close to the truth.
It's very adjacent to
it's
truth.
It's very, very troubling. I mean, you watch it and I love hoax programs. I mean, there's one that came out back in the 70s called Alternative 3. I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I haven't.
It's on YouTube and it's really good. It's a pretend episode of Science Report, and they do it. And the idea is that they've found evidence via an investigation into the brain drain from Britain to the US of experts that actually people are being shuttled off the Earth to set up stations on the moon to go to Mars, which has already been landed on.
Yeah.
Preposterous, but it's beautifully done, because it's done in the, just as this one is done beautifully in the idiom of a Channel 5 program or something like that.
Yeah.
But because it's done in the very high, serious, late 70s, science program thing. And it's people still watch it, and there are screenings.
And of course, you have the Chris Morris classic nonsense.
Nonsense, that's
where,
right.
Where you had the procession of, I think, Gary Lineker and Phil Collins and all of these people all saying this is nonsense. About, how paedophiles were, whatever it was. You'll find it on YouTube, but fantastically well done. But again, because it's kind of plausible.
Yeah. And this one, I really, I think, massive props to all the people involved, because there were 400 complaints.
Well, my first encounter with it was
the complaint,
the outrage on Twitter, with people saying, "Bloody hell, have you seen this? Now Channel 4 promoting this wacko company, where they're proposing to basically turn us all into bloody cannibals." And this went on for hours on Twitter, and then until people started saying,
until the Twitter hive mind finally woke up, satire.
Then they Googled what satire was, and then they went
irony
back and said,
does not prosper on Twitter. I think it's fair to say, and especially now that the bird has been replaced by an X, which I think is sort of just horribly awful in every conceivable sad way,
turning into a Marvel comic.
But I think that was, and it speaks to what you were talking about in the first half hour, which is the emotional impact of that documentary was immense.
I'll give myself away. There was a bit where I was crying in it, because
it's horrible.
Because there's a bit at the end where this poor little kid is saying, clearly doesn't want to go, and this entrepreneur, who is so well drawn,
brilliantly drawn,
says, do you want to be a hero? And the little kid nods, and she hands him like a cuddly toy or something, and sort of gestures, off you go into surgery then. And the kid turns and goes, and it was chokingly well done.
It's a brilliant piece of television, and it shows why satire, when it's done as brilliantly as that, is as powerful as it,
so much credit to everybody involved in that, because one misstep at any point would have absolutely punctured the
one
balloon.
Fleabag style look at the camera,
like that.
Would have been a disaster,
but it trod the line perfectly,
and he maintained his noisy aggravating persona throughout. I am on the factory floor.
Greg Wallace in Awana has turned himself, I think, from one of Britain's most irritating TV personalities into an absolute bloody legend.
It took a lot of guts to do that, because it could have gone horribly wrong, and there has been some kickback, but I think the overall impression has been massively to the good.
I think, listen, if you haven't seen it, folks,
watch it.
Go and watch it, and tell a friend to watch it, because I think Not only is it great TV, but I honestly think it touches on so many real important issues, because if it wasn't that close to the bone, it wouldn't make you
feel like a bucket of ice cold water.
It really
on
is.
The face, and you're thinking, yeah. How have we got to the point where this is even slightly plausible?
Yeah.
In 2023.
Yeah,
it's awful, but brilliant.
Well done, well done, Channel 4. Well done, Greg Wallace.
Yeah, props to all of them.
This must be a relatively new process.
It is. I mean, under EU law, we couldn't possibly operate machines like this due to legislation. But thankfully, now we're out, we can harvest people and we can pay them for their flesh.
So what haven't we've waffled on so magically about Greg Wallace for so long? There's stuff that's fallen through the cracks.
Well, let's bow our heads briefly in honour of Sinead O'Connor. Oh, that was a real blow, wasn't it?
It was. It's one of those deaths where. It's not. It wasn't a surprise, but it was a shock.
Shock, exactly. All the obvious points. You know, nothing compares to you. One of the great videos of all time. And I was reading in one of the obits that John Mabry, who directed that video, you know, did lots of filming around Paris for a sort of traditional 90s video, and then he decided, I'm just going to do this one shot with her, and kind of video history and pop history was made,
yeah.
You know, and she cried. She says in her memoirs it's because she was thinking of her mother who was killed in a car accident.
But who was very abusive
but
to
who
her.
Was also... Yeah. And yeah. Look, she led a very troubled and rackety life and her relationship with the religion. You know, she was an ordained minister in a breakaway Catholic church. And
weirdly, she was the most notoriety she ever got wasn't here. It was in the States where... She appeared on Saturday Night Live and ripped up a photograph of John Paul II.
But helping to launch the... Yeah.
Well, 10 years later,
the whole child abuse thing
broke and she was on the money,
well
you know.
Ahead. I mean, I think the kind of, you know, the epitaph is that actually she was what she always said she wanted to be. She was a protest singer.
That's right.
You know, and she made amazing pop. There's that duet with... another loss last December, Terry Hall.
Yeah.
All Kinds of Everything from, I think, the late 90s. And beautiful rendition. And she did duets with Shane McGann. But, you know, she explored all kinds of genres, reggae and soul and jazz. But she didn't want to be a Celine Dion. She wanted to be Bob Dylan.
I think, she's clearly lived, you know, an awfully troubled life.
Very troubled,
I do think... her legacy will be quite significant.
Oh, yeah.
And she her figure and personality and her character will live on a lot longer than many others.
That's the case. It's interesting, isn't it, when you know a cultural figure dies and you feel the breath go out of you
and
a bit.
You sort of go, oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's a bit of me you know, it's a bit of us all, isn't it?
Part of our biography. It's a part of the
really
soundtrack
is.
Of our lives.
It really was.
She's
only
56, nothing, you know.
Nothing. 2 years older than my good self.
And lots else going on. I mean, it would be rude not to mention Mr. Dan Wooden, wouldn't
What's
it?
Going on? I mean, we probably can't say for fear of... Well, I don't know. Maybe we can. Dan Wooden, the GB News presenter, the Mail Online columnist, has been accused...
Well, not at the moment.
Yes. So let's assume he's been suspended, although Mail Online won't say anything about it. But what seems to be a terrific investigation by our fellow independent news media type...
Byline Times,
who've...
Done very well.
Who've been investigating him for 3 years in what's now known as a catfishing... scam or whatever you want to call it, where you're pretending to be somebody to get
someone called using the pseudonym Martin Branning,
which is this portmanteau of two EastEnder characters. I think.
Apparently trying and using it to allegedly procure sexual images and footage of colleagues. So very strange.
It's really, really bizarre story. So that's all there for people to look at if you want to, folks. But the thing that I find unbelievable. Is that the weight of this evidence, and he's now doing this crowdfunder to, you know, let me sue. He's got, I think he's employed Mishkon de Rea, one of the biggest, most aggressive law firms in the world, to defend his reputation, send out threatening letters to publishers saying, you know, pouring doubt on the story and stuff like this. How you can sit through pontificating about Philip Schofield, as he did ad nauseum, and then find yourself in exactly the same position... But carry, but pretend that the rules don't apply to you. Oh, not only don't the rules apply, it's because of the rules that you're being attacked.
Not for the first time, we noticed that it's on the right that you get the worst snowflakes.
That's right. Right?
You know, him saying that dark forces are at work.
Nefarious.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
They're not, or rather not.
No, it's journalists that are at work.
It's called journalists, and, you know, he's... Victoria Newton said, editor of The Sun said, there's an investigation going on to what happened there.
Yeah.
As you said, the Mail Online is, shall we say, not using him at the moment.
Yeah.
He's obviously intending to use his GB News platform to continue this sort of phony crusade.
Yeah.
But there is a huge hypocrisy, at minimum.
So anyway, folks, that's enough about Dan Wotton for the moment. Remember, please, the latest edition of The New European is on newsstands right now, as well as on our website. That's at thenew.co.uk. And podcast listeners can get a great deal on a subscription. Just head to thenew.co.uk/2MATTS. That's the number 2, M-A-T-T-S. And I will give you personally, out of my own pocket, 25 quid's worth of Bollocks to Brexit passport cover to stick on your blue passport next time it comes through the post. And you'll get that free with a subscription to The New European. Thanks as ever to the third Matt. That's Matt Hill, our producer.
The mighty Rethink, Matt Hill.
Rethink Audio. And until next week.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.